Where is it? Cheese and consomme and crackers, and there's a little pineapple. Would you drink, what do you drink, Julie? Milk?
Coffee?
Coffee, she says.
Hey, I just found another good living, go together eating material.
Tell me about it.
Public last night is smelt. You ever had smelt?
Never.
Smelt?
Look like overgrown sardines.
That's for Passover or something, right?
I don't know. I sure ate them last night.
Alright.
Mm-mm. They're frozen at 77 cents a pound. And I cooked them according to directions on the back, and I ate a half pound by myself. And I'm glad I didn't cook the rest because I'd eaten them too. I was eating more. Well, I'll tell you, that was good.
Did the ring like them too?
Oh, he about drove me insane.
Yeah, they're Jewish. You know.
Really?
They sell with matzahs. I think.
Hey, that trailer down there is just like first class, isn't it? I mean, you can entertain white folks down there at the trailer. If any white folks come out to visit you.
It's amazing. Faye took a liking to it. She's first one. I got to looking at it and see, and I thought, goodness gracious, look what I staggered into. And the next morning, Faye sat down here and she said, you know, I've been thinking about that. And she,
That's coffee, not chocolate.
And she, but I still think that little, for my purpose, you see, I don't want living quarters out there, I just want a bedroom. Well, you can sleep in one of those little travel trailers.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, we can fix the bed.
Don't tell me it's simple.
I can't do anything but what it's simple.
You put a board under this if it's too soft.
We don't need a board. It just wasn't in the frame. It must have been out at one end. Because when I sat on either end, it would go down on me.
Only thing, you didn't find a heater.
I didn't look real hard, but I sure didn't find one. Maybe they just use the oven. That's all I use in my place is one burner on the gas stove. My place is a lot bigger than that trailer.
And a fan.
Mm-hmm. If it gets really cold, I blow it down my bedroom with a
heater.
You can, you can blow it with the air conditioner.
Mm-hmm. Trouble with my air conditioner, though, it heats up the rest of the office. I mean, it circulates through the whole thing. I'm just heating my kitchen and bedroom. You know, this is that back part that I built.
So you can't.
Yeah. The air conditioner circulates everything. And that's what
it circulates all over the house.
All that big front room and all the little developing rooms. And that's what costs money.
You don't necessarily want to, yeah. Well, one of these fans is good.
That's really a nice fan.
I bought them last year for $50. And the year before that, I bought them for $50, but they were better fans, different made. And last year I couldn't get that make. So I just bought a couple of extra ones. I didn't have that attic fan then, you see.
Started using that yet?
Mm-hmm. I use it all the time. I mean, every day, every night. Oh, yeah.
Have you guys been out here 10 years?
And all you need is just change the air.
All of a sudden, here you come up with 18 fans and an attic fan and an air conditioner all in one year.
Well, first, yeah, I've had enough energy to do anything besides. I got relieved of the campus and relieved of that herd of cattle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm,
kind of woodpecker?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think he was considering a trail this size at all. But those little travel, and I could understand why he wanted one of those little travel trailers. But he kept saying they were so high. And
they also smell it when you go into one of them on the lot. They always smell it.
Mm-hmm.
And guy says when you walk in one, it's all like it's
going to
fall apart.
No. That was that one, see.
Just one. Mm-hmm.
Well, this booger down there is really, that's a nice living place where you put it there. The trailer's so nice, and the windows. I like it.
Jeffrey, I told you that. He came by yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Well, his mom and papa had been out here on Saturday a couple of weeks before. And they reported favorably to him on some of the things we do out here. I tried not to get into them, but they wouldn't let me be. I want to talk to him about Foxfire. And so Jeffrey came. Oh, I really poured it into him last night. I mean, he showed me where he was living. Over there in the middle of that 20-acre pasture. He's going to put that, that extend the electricity out there, but they're going to charge him. Somebody'd have to pay a minimum of $20 a month for the next 35 years. I said, hellfire, you live over there. It belongs to Louise or Lucille Gladney. She's one of the choice people here. If I live out in the middle of the pasture, I'd move up there next door to her. I work him over. He had a sense of humor. And about that time, Mr. Eastman came.
Oh, really?
It was just marvelous.
Mr. Eastman came up here to advise me on that electrical thing. But he didn't have anything to report on. He tried to get in touch with Forest Power, and he missed him. He never telephones, you know. He just goes. But he came to spend the evening, because this Eastman plays television, and he don't care that much for television. His best time he has is on Saturday night when he goes to the auction down there. And he stays till bedtime. He stays till it closes, I think. He goes when it opens and stays till it closes. And generally buys a few things. Got no place to put them, you see. He's all stocked up. He's going to build another shed. He got a shed there that would weather a tornado or at least a hurricane. Mr. Eastman started talking. Jeffrey was sitting down there with Fayette, and he just couldn't stand it. He'd never heard anybody talk like that, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens all the time. When you get somebody who's as far along as he is, and he knows Jack Sanders.
Yeah.
Jack's clearinghouse for most of them over there, you told me.
Mm-hmm.
But see, this wasn't Jack Sanders. And Mr. Eastman wandered around his universe a good bit. With just perfect ease, always circumstantial, you see. To hear Mr. Eastman talking and to hear me chime in, you see, you see the day from night.
Mm-hmm.
You got the contrast, right? A living contrast, right? there. Jeffrey didn't say anything, but he took it all in.
I bet his eyes were just popping.
He, yeah.
He sort of sits back when he gets to
you. Yeah. You know, he's really a beautiful person. And you know, mm-hmm. His eyes came through and his smile came out. And he got closer and closer. And he's very restrained. He's fine. He got closer and closer. And the season kept on. I was watching his face.
Where is it? And nobody did you sing. And, she must have eaten choice. He's not in a hurry. He sits down and he loves to talk. He loves to report what I call reports, you see. And he'll pick it up from any quarter at any minute, you see. Always circumstantial. Now, when I was in high school, everybody said that. We talked about mules, Western mules. I told him, don't talk to me about Western mules. I never heard anything like that. But you see, you go along with them and it gives them a little audience.
You ought to hear, I've heard a piece of to the tape of that guy, just his voice alone is marvelous.
When he came up the ramp saying, "Geez, I thought my truck was going to fall apart. Geez, my geez." He stuck his cap over one side of his head and he said, "I was riding along," and that old dude showing, you know, and he said, "I was riding along and I thought I'm just going to fall apart." And he said, "I looked up and there was a damn airplane right above me." He told it on the ramp, he told it right there in the porch, and he told it right there. Got bigger every time. He just kept scratching his head and putting that cap on one side.
It doesn't get bigger in time. It does as you, but it doesn't matter.
Well, it get louder.
That was your idea.
Oh, you hadn't run into that Rob Roy over there in Cross Creek.
I've not run into any of Miss Mary's Marvin's friends or relatives.
Now, it's Mr. Roberts and Rob Roy.
Yeah.
They always got their nose together. Well, Mr. Robin, I'll get his name later. He runs a store down by the creek.
Oh.
And
Roberts.
Could be Roberts.
I don't know.
And but Rob Roy, he's got the damnedest drawl that you've ever put on to anybody.
Oh, really?
And, see, I ran into a fella.
You know he's a big shot out at the farm.
Well, he's the one that really put the party on when it came. Miss Mary and Marvin cranked it up, and they told Rob Roy, said, "We're going to have this party, and maybe you can invite somebody." And he invited the old damn university. Miss Mary sitting around mumbling this, that, and the other. That was funny. But anyhow, I ran into this fellow that I happened to have met some years ago. He's friends of Vincent, who married Sandra, and Sam McFadden. And he's a ornamental horticulturist. And I'll be damned if he didn't start in on the whole scene. I wouldn't suspect it of him, see, because he's a little flitty. You know, you think he'd stay in his books all the time, or at least in his flowers. But he had some feeling about Cross Creek and what went on in Cross Creek.
Sam?
Yeah, Sam McFadden did. And he had a hell of a feeling for this Rob Roy. He said, "Well, you listen to him now." He said, "You should have heard him 10 years ago before he got into the university." He said, "He could really talk then." Mm-hmm. He said, "The university's already ruined him." He said he was so melodic, it's just like singing when you listen to him talk.
Yeah.
And evidently, Sam could detect the difference over a 10-year period of how this man could talk.
Is that right? Now, who is Sam?
Sam McFadden. He's somebody you wouldn't even dream that he had any idea that people talked or didn't talk.
No. He just...
Well, you know about him, Faith.
I get roses flying. He's a
florist?
No, he works. He has charge of all the stuff out there at the university garden. He's the one you go to, and you know, if you want any flowers for a party or anything.
He's a PhD.
He's a real.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And it really shocked me. I just was passing time of day with him. I thought it'd be fun to talk to him. I hadn't run into him before, and we got off on this Rob Roy thing. And he gave that report on him, and I thought that was right astounding. He talked about how the people down here were all trap fishers and trot line fishers and poachers in general.
Yeah.
And this only happened he said it happened just about 10 years ago, is when that came to a halt with all the laws and regulations really got too tight on them.
When it got to a head, yeah.
And he said they all had to go to work at the university.
Yeah.
And a whole group of them.
Oh, yes, that's been since I came down here.
Right. They were still out. Well, see, there were two game wardens there. And of course, they were joshing back and forth all the time.
Yeah.
I think I told you that what old Rob Roy said. He's talking about this one game warden. They're joshing him about trap fishing all the time. And Rob Roy says, "Why, hell," he says, Jim's game warden named Jim. He says, "Hell, you could sit in the back end of the boat, and I could sit in the front end of the boat, and you'd never catch me trap fishing. I'd be pulling them in." See, they do it for a game now.
Uh-huh.
There's no way they can catch enough fish to make it worth their while to escape fines and everything.
Yeah.
They love to. And game wardens go out and hunting for them.
You still go through the motion.
Oh, yeah. They'll go out and build traps and trap fish. Yeah. But it's just for sport now. You know, it's like getting a license and going deer hunting.
Yeah.
They're going poaching. Gator hunting. Everything. Go right on and do it.
Yeah. There's just one family left that makes a living at it.
Poaching?
No, they get catfish. They're just catfish.
Yeah, they just fish commercial fishing.
See, Marvin's sister and Marvin and Miss Mary did all the fishing, and the sister came from a catfishing family, but she said that they had to quit it, couldn't make any more living at it.
Yeah. Well, now there's Balkanites, and they live over there by the Dodge. You go right by that place when you turn into the Dodge. That's not yours.
Mm-mm.
Place. Well, Dodge the one bought my cattle.
Mm-hmm.
You know who they are. And that whole family still does it.
It's a hard life now. I mean, it was a hard life then, but the place is overfished.
Yeah.
They just can't get enough fish. So, effort to put out.
Yeah.
And so that gal was talking, I can't remember her name. She's a funny gal. I stole somebody's whiskey and gave it to her. Got her good and drunk. She was talking about that, and she didn't want anything to do with catfish anymore.
No.
Morning, noon, and night. Just hand them out.
She had enough of it.
Mm-hmm. That's Rob Roy's wife. Yep, one of the sisters. There were two sisters there, and one of them was Rob Roy's wife. Right, what a character!
Clarabel is the one who was married to one of the fine fishermen. They've left. They had a trailer down there, and they've left. They separated, and then they both left. And she's up in town doing something.
Was that the Seventh Day? That Latter Day Saints thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna get Miss Mary to tell me that story again. That's just too funny.
Yeah.
That's the damnedest thing I ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Here's a Christian religion broke the family.
She goes around in white.
Yeah, dances and drinks.
She's still doing it.
Her religion taught her to drink and to dance. And wouldn't let them live together because the old man was a catfisher. And that was against the rules and regulations to eat catfish.
So they got rid of him. Well, now, he was, had a reputation being one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best of the fishermen.
You don't know where he went?
I don't keep up with Miss Mary's and Marvin's friends. They don't carry me into that world.
I hear she said, "Don't tell guys."
That's right. I'll just wait for it to surface and see what comes of it. She knows damn well I tell Guy.
She
makes some great story.
She was over here last night, I told you.
Yeah.
She came to see Mamma.
Well, she called me up Sunday morning, first thing, after the party.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah, just was talking, well, what do you think of the party? Talk about the party. I just loved it. She wouldn't wait for me to come around or anything like that. She probably called up and offered a friend to discuss the party, what happened, what went on, who got drunk and who didn't.
Mamma was just sitting in there chuckling like everything, because I told her that they had a party Saturday night and didn't invite guys. Uh-huh. And she's trying to figure it out. Well, maybe they just had men. And then, but anyway, then she's just laughing because Miss Mary came in there, and the first thing she said was, them was in my fishing clothes. I've been fishing. And I said, oh, Miss Mary, I wish I could, you teach me how to cook fish. Well, she didn't pick that up very fast. Mother thought the end thing, that was sort of funny. And after she heard that she'd had the party, then she said, but she just up. She'd been sick all week. She had the flu, and she'd just been sick all week. And this was her first day up. And she went down to the doctor and got her some antibodies. And it got her well. But she said she knew she was sick because she went to bed and she said to Marvin, Marvin, I've got me a sore throat. And it's getting worse. And so they went down the next morning and got those antibodies. But the week before, she fished all week. But last week, she was sick all week.
She wasn't sick Saturday. She was an up and around body Saturday. Oh, Marvin, he was dragging. I tell you, poor guy, he was holding the world up. He was sort of walking
people
around. God Almighty, you should. It looked like a Ku Klux Klan outfit in the middle of the woods. There must have been 50 or 60 cars out there. They're parked way out on the highway and all up and down the road. I mean, you go, there's this one house, you know.
It's what big. Did you say about the PSD?
Oh, that, I wish I could remember the man's name. Is Marvin's boss. And we were sitting on one of the benches there, drinking beer and talking. She was saying, Wade, see that man over there? She says, that's Dr. Story or something, you know. He says, now ain't that something? Just look at him. That's all I ever hear from Marvin. Dr. Story this and Dr. Story that. You just look at him over there. And she was so disappointed in this PhD.
He didn't even look to
him. No, he looked terrible for a PhD.
Now, that's what you do in the old world, you know. A judge had to look like a judge, and
yep.
Congressman, uh-huh. A congressman, you see, they had to look the part.
Preacher had to be pious all the time.
Yeah, you kept looking at him.
Right, he had sanctimonious look.
Well, you know, Miss Mary has an image to keep over with me and Guy, evidently, because she says very flatly she doesn't like strong language and she doesn't like drink.
Miss Mary is a lady of many tongues.
She couldn't possibly invite Guy.
Well, it did in a whole keg of beer and then went out and bought four more cases of beer. That's how many people were there. How much she was distaste for drink.
She sent for it, you reckon?
No, one of the grad students and I went out and got it for him.
But you got it for them.
Mm-hmm.
For Miss Mary?
Right. They had four kegs, four big barrels of ice, and filled them up with beer, and they had the big beer keg out there.
What is a big beer keg?
Yeah, that's a round, that's 22 gallons, I think. 27 gallons or something. This is right smart beer.
They had several kegs.
No, it is one keg. It's good one gracious, keg. Yeah. That's enough to.
But you had to fill it.
Well, you buy it filled.
I see.
Yeah, so draft beer.
And it wasn't just beer, they had other things.
Well, Jim, some game warden named Jim, I never did get his last name straight, but it was his father was there, and he bought a box full of whiskey.
Jeez.
Well, it was a cooler that had about four or five different whiskeys in it. So they'd go around, and that's the whiskey I scoffed up for the two sisters, Rob Roy's wife, Rob Roy's wife and his Marvin's sister-in-law. So there's connections around there somewhere. But they're both characters, and they didn't want beer, but they sure, man, they scoffed that stuff up. I mean, it was almost straight. I mean, it was a hell of a drink, and I was expecting to see them really flinch because I made it strong, being sort of nasty. It was just like they were drinking water. It was all okay. And they just go right along. It just didn't do anything. I mean, I'd drink a lot and I'd have shuddered on that one. Doesn't bother. Drank it right down. Then she wanted another glass full.
Right away.
Pretty quick. She and they don't drink much, see. Just on occasions like that. But when they do it, they scoff it up and love to get drunk. And they're really funny. I'm telling you, it was some occasion. They had, well, Jim, the game warden, was there with his girlfriend. And see, they just lived together. And everybody knows it around there. You know, these funny moral situations that go on. And he's a highly respected member of the community now. You know, he's enforcer of all the laws. And he was packing a gun while he was there.
Oh,
was
he?
Right next to his chewing tobacco. And there was a black couple there with a baby. Baby was passed around from hand to hand, and the black couple was there carrying on, having a fine time. And all these PhDs and all the rednecks and everything you can imagine was over there.
Well, who'd you get acquainted with?
Well, I just sort of halfway met the guy Gary that was sort of he was a graduating PhD, the young fellow that got his authenticity signed out there under the tree. And
what was that ceremony?
Well, it wasn't a ceremony so much as I was impressed by the fact that that's where his PhD was more or less finalized, was on Miss Mary's property. You know, it was midst of everybody drinking, and I just happened to pass by, and there was this big paper out there, and the man said, well, this is what I'm doing, you know, I'm just signing him into existence, so to speak, giving him a $20,000 a year meal ticket. He's got a job already in Atlanta. He's supposed to graduate in June, but he's finished everything, so he's already working. He already got in a company car, and they're putting him up in a motel till he finds a place to live. I imagine what he does is put in golf courses. And that's where the money is. It's not in cattle, it's in golf balls.
They fried fish, Miss Mary?
Barbecued pork and beef.
And Miss Mary did?
No, good Lord. No, Marvin. Marvin and Rob Roy. And, Rob Roy didn't do too much. It was his buddy there, his fishing buddy, the guy that runs the store. He did all the frying. And one of the, I think probably the neighbor that has the bull.
Yeah, Zane.
Now, they didn't introduce me to him, but he kept getting in his car and said, well, I'll go next door and get something. So I figured he was awful close. You know, going next door, and I figured that he might be the owner of that bull.
Zane and his Bremen bull.
And Miss Mary doesn't say too much in this occasion like that.
Oh, doesn't she?
No, she just sort of wanders around and smiles. And I mean, well, she knows better. You can't get into any launch into anything. There's too much going on, too many people around. She'll kibitz with you, that's all.
Well, does she look like an old hand at it?
Yeah, she loves it.
Well, you see, I've heard her tell it many times. See, she always loved a party. And the young people would come over there, and they would take up all the carpets and dance over there at her house.
That's every
when,
week.
Yes, that's when this fella that she raised was living there by the time.
That's not the sheriff. And that's her grandson, is the sheriff? Young fella?
No. No. This fella was. She raised him in the 30s.
Oh, okay. Because her grand, that fellow that's the sheriff, was there for a while.
I see.
Okay.
He's awful reserved fella. He had to maintain his sobriety, but the game wardens were getting drunk. There's a great story on the, I forgot, it was Jim and one more game warden were out, and I think it was Rob Roy and somebody else were out at night, and it was a moonlit night, and they saw him. Game warden saw Rob Roy and this other fella, and he says, "Hot spit, we got him now." And so Rob Roy saw him coming, and they reached down, and they didn't have any fish. And so they reached down and got a bunch of hyacinths and loaded the hyacinths in the boat, and the hyacinths were flopping around, you know, because the boat's rocking, flashing in the moonlight. And the closer the game wardens came, the better they were feeling, you know. And they had a boat full of fish. And they got over there and said, "Gotcha," you know. And they got in the boat and said, "What is this? Where are those fish?" There wasn't a damn fish in the boat. He says, "I want to write you up for hijacking hyacinths or something." You they just love to do it.
Hijack, if you hijack a truck, it's a truck that's already been stolen.
Oh, really? How's that?
Okay.
That's what he said on the Dope Today program.
Uh-huh. That's the meaning of the word.
He's the editor. He runs the Today Show at night, the night show.
Uh-huh.
I've never listened to that.
There's something they call Tomorrow. Is that it?
That guy's from California.
On the same.
His name is. He used to be the newsman on the LA station. And now he's moving up in the world, I guess. He's pretty good, though.
I never seen anything but the Today program.
Means you hijack something, you're stealing a stolen truck?
That's what he said. He said that's where it started. The hijack, it's something that's already stolen.
Well, I can see that's Miss Mary in that party, and you can just see her light. She's ready for it. She's been cranking this thing for a long time. And that's, she said, "Wade, you ready for another one?" This is the morning after. "You ready for another one?" "I'll get one going. We'll have a smaller one this time." In other words, she wants a little livelier party. A big wheel PhD thing around.
Well, that Christmas party that you went to, that was more in her style.
Yes, that was only about 8 or 10 people sitting around the table, mainly.
And they were all Townsends.
All relatives. And now they pass the stories around.
That is.
Yeah, that's where you get into the, that's where your TV set's turned on. The channel and that channel. They're all there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what, you know, the communication thing in this institution, that's precisely what you've gotten on to. That was the entertainment back before, just plain damn talking, storytelling around here. That's all it was to it. Nobody read. Didn't have anything to do except talk.
That's right, and that's what they
cared about.
And that's still their world.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Miss Mary, I mean, that's, you can tell it right off. That's what she's up for.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately up for that.
And it's difficult for her to listen to somebody else. Really. She got to do something. Well,
I wish I could get Rob Roy and Guy together. Even though he might have been ruined by the university, he's still delightful to listen to.
Who's that?
Rob Roy. He really has a...
He sounds genuine to us, doesn't he?
Oh, he does. Now, I don't know what on earth he sounds like before, but he's still really melodious. Absolutely.
Well, now, let me tell you, this is what I got into.
What'd you leave that little piece of cheese for?
Because you didn't give me time to get to it.
This is
too late.
Do they have much storytelling? Well, I mean, say was the one person that had such a good read, would read books for them, or on any of that?
You know, that's the 1944, January 44. That's an Assam. That's a little thing. Now I'll read it to you. I'll transcribe it and then comment on it. We got a glimpse of up India the other day. I'm flabbergasted for words. And this is not funny. One sees strange creatures. People, I mean. Sanitation didn't enter here. Now I'm thinking about the GIs. Going off on sanitation. Those ancient types of men, mongoloid, small, shaggy, they looked as if they had just come from the hills. And they looked ashen, as if the grave cloth was only been lifted. Mummy dust. A naked chap passed in a tonga. He was drawn in a cart of some kind. Now, I've got two things mixed there. Tonga is something the horse pulls, and what he was in was a little soapbox. I've got a comment on it. It was a city, a naked chap passed. Yeah, I read that. It was a city of one story. The streets were dirt. There was no native section. It was a city of natives. You were in their country. The younger ones were deferential. The elders did not catch your eye. A craftsman was mending or making brassware over a charcoal fire. His child wife, with a piece of silver in her left nostril, pumped the bellows, both squatting. And the wind carried the smoke his way, and she coughed. The holy man passed by. He was emaciated, but vigorous. His hair wild, and colorful rags hanging from some part of him. His limbs were smeared with ashes, and the ceremonial marking on his forehead that looked like a massive sore. And it took my breath when I came upon a temple, a Hindu temple, for the first time. It was much bigger than the surroundings. It wasn't big. It was ornate without any touch of grandeur. Now, let me read you. I'm part of it, see, I'm commenting on it in the light of what I've learned. Now, this is one brief glimpse of up India, as I called it. I never went back to look again. As I say, I am flabbergasted for words. They are ancient types of men. Anthropology preserved alive. The one glimpse that remains in my mind is the man in the cart. Now, the tonga is one thing, and this cart, I call it, is another. The tonga is something like a gharry drawn by a horse. This cart was closer to a soapbox. And this dignitary, this naked fellow, sat almost on the ground, his knees close to his chin. His face was turned my way, but he looked through me, or past me.
I saw the whites of his eyes, unsmiling, silent. He had to be a dignitary to submit to such a slow pace, to sit so low and in such a strain, and enjoy the public view. Now you see the difference in 1943 and now. I'm just reconstructing it,
mm-hmm.
but I make it so much more circumstantial. Well, why didn't I do it then? I didn't know how. Almost anyone would say, if I only had a camera. Well, of course, but I scarcely use my eyes. I could look at the cart to see if it was a converted GI ammunition box. They're heavy. And the wheels, I could look at them, and the wheels to see if they are discs sawed out of wood, or fragile like those on a doll buggy, or serviceable like those on the wagons we call the Dixie Flyer. But the motion was so slow. It could have been a walk, a slow walk, or a fast walk. Now the holy man was something else. He swept by on foot. His hair wild, uncombed, uncut, blown in the wind, or blown in it by his walk, you know, your walk will blow your hair. Those rags he wore are clear to my mind, but my mind won't dissect them, whether they are colored and patched together or are a light flowing gown like streamers stitched together. I say he is emaciated but vigorous. I say colorful rags hanging from some part of him. His limbs are smeared with ashes, I say, and on his forehead a ceremonial marking that looked like a massive sore. Now these are my words. Holy men were plentiful enough. I can say his limbs are smeared with ashes, and more than likely the marking is Betelgeuse. Now these are ancient types. These are ancient types I call there are ancient types I call mongoloid, small, shaggy. I would like to see the shaggy ones again. I fear it would turn out they just don't get haircuts. I have no recollection of the Mongo features, not in Assam. The craftsman was working on brassware over a charcoal fire. I seem to look at him, but I don't. I look at the child. I called her his child wife, a piece of silver in her left nostril. She tends the fire. It pleases me that there is a tiny bit of action. The wind blows the smoke and she coughs. He doesn't. Both are squatting. I don't look at him. I don't look at the child either. No, I barely look. Yet I do see three types of ancient man. The dignitary in the soapbox. The holy man of emaciated and vigorous, the shaggy craftsman working over his charcoal burner. And I don't linger. I was scared. The village of low houses was certainly off limits, and I did not return. Perhaps I couldn't really expect to return. What I saw was enough to fill my mind for days. In point of method, I didn't know to return or to take this fleeting visit to the typewriter and look at it. It just lingered in my mind, one large exposure. And that is what I set down on paper and figured that is all there is to do. I was scared, as I said, and what I saw took my breath. It is clear from the closing remark. A plane hits a craftsman. I was scared, as I said, and what I saw took my breath. It is clear from the closing remark. Plane hits a cirrus cloud and drops 5,000 feet in a second.
That's when you said you couldn't see it, couldn't go back 5,000 of years after the temple. He talks about the temple, and he said you can't look at a temple without being affected. So after all, you've gone back 5,000 years, like when a plane hits the cirrus cloud.
Oh, yes. The fact is, I was scared, simply scared. It's the same as the loss of altitude I speak of. The plane hits a cirrus cloud and in a second drops 5,000 feet. I went back 5,000 years in a moment. It amazes me that I was that I saw so much. If I couldn't have gone a bit farther and say I never quite. It amazes me that I saw that then, you know, that this 5,000 years. I haven't proof of this. If I could have gone a bit farther and said I never quite looked at these figures, I wasn't that far along. It's curious. You look back and see where you were. And then I fill it in. See, I spend more time on the temple, a little of that temple. Hell, I don't know anything about temples. Nobody in the temple, you can get a picture of a temple. That's what I've been doing now for a week or two. I've resurrected. I got into this, I told you that.
Yeah,
I got
yeah.
into this through the bosun.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It's been fun for him to look at his own, you know, degree of sin in 30 years ago.
It's 30 years.
30 years. And what he can,
30 years ago.
And then what? And I kept telling him, you know, all those letters that I sort of packed around and saved, and he said, there's nothing to them. And I kept saying, yes, but you'll be surprised if you look at some of them and what you did see.
I didn't believe it.
He didn't believe it. But he was, you know, on the track even then. He was trying to look, but just didn't quite know how.
Now, some of the China letters are much more ambitious than this. I mean, they are. I read it and I wonder how that fella did that then. So and you see, I never had the feeling that I was a writer or wanted. I never wanted to be a writer. I never. But I've always done things like this, and I don't know where it comes from. I just have no idea what the source of it is. You see, it doesn't come from literature. It doesn't work that way. You read literature and you've got no urge to write. Well, if you do, you don't do very well. It doesn't transfer.
Mm-hmm. He would write these things back, and I'd copy them and circulate them, and we'd have readings.
Yeah. They'd people call Faye up and ask her what you're doing.
I'm just going, I'll be back.
And ask her if you've got more China letters.
That must be good. I like what you did with that one.
Mm-hmm.
That glimpse, you see, that's up in Assam.
Mm-hmm.
And Assam, you see, we know that 2-3 days. That's where you take off on the hump for the hump. That all seems sort of fabulous. You see, we took off in that old B cargo plane. C, what was it?
C-47?
Yeah. Yeah. And I noticed we didn't gain altitude so much. And then I noticed what that bastard was doing, you see. He wasn't going over the mountains. He was going through the valley. And if you can do anything more here, I'm scared of him. In an airplane. I did that on a number of occasions. And I remember the last thing I saw, I looked down on a glacier and it was green and sparkling in the sunlight. And the next thing I knew, I was in China. We didn't have any oxygen, you see, and we all passed out. Oh, but the pilot, I presume. Maybe sat in those bucket seats. I remember passing out just a little at a time.
Good Lord.
Up and down each side of the thing.
You didn't ever encounter anybody named Marsh Stainer back then, did you, in China?
I don't remember. I can't remember even the people I put in the letter.
Well, that's the Flying Tiger man you're talking about?
Yeah.
I keep forgetting about that.
Yeah.
That, I ran into the...
The Paulies?
Yeah, the Paulies. Down in Miami, people started the Flying Tiger scene. He's a straight opportunist.
Yeah.
Absolute opportunist. Had nothing to do with altruism or anything like that. Just,
yeah.
He'd go from one island and with $3. Leave there 4 months later owning the island, and he'd lose it all and go somewhere else. This guy.
Now, what is that?
Paulie, and he wound up, if he didn't start the Flying Tigers, he took it over and ran it. It was he and somebody else did it, and it was all strictly money, just opportunist type thing. Just nothing to do with fervor or spirit or anything like that.
Yeah.
Enterprise. Straight enterprise.
They're still going.
You know, those, some of those emotions or feelings are getting away. I know Phyllis was saying yesterday that she worked with this fellow who ran against Don Fuquay for Congress. And I said, she said, well, I said, I can see so many ways that just from all I knew about him was what I learned through her was that he could tighten up a little bit. He said, I said, no, it looks to me like, you know, in a way, you put your money on the wrong horse. If you wanted to have an influence, you'd have backed Don Fuquay. But she says that wasn't the point. The point was the cause. And this fella, I backed him because I had a feeling that he was going to do these things. I said to her, now, you know, I always have to apologize in making these statements, you see, when I don't mean them, it's just something that cuts through. Is that I said, the only thing that happens now, if you're going to have a cause, is it's going to blind you.
Yeah. I had a little bit of awareness of that with this McGovern business. I mean, I wanted something other than McGovern because he's too much of an idealist, and I just saw him. I was a losing battle, and I didn't see any attainment of power, position, or anything hanging around with that fella. He sort of scared me. But
they said he was pretty skillful and had a remarkable party organization.
Well, that all being true, he
still was pretty.
He was a little bit
too
much cause, and people scared of him. Generally speaking,
people scared of him.
Now he might be able to run. That kind of person would stand a better chance. I mean, not counting Nixon right now, but if that whole election were moved up 4 years, the times would be better for him right now. Be better
possibly.
6 years from now. The times have changed a whole lot.
Yeah.
Good Lord. I mean, from the time I grew up, you know, in the 50s, early 50s, and the 40s, we're in a whole totally different world.
Yeah.
Absolute different world.
Nothing in common.
Mm-mm.
Now, let me see. I was trying to think, Wade. You, the last time you were reporting on this, sports arena over here. I forget what I call it.
Sportatorium.
Sportatorium, bargain slide. What are they going to put in?
Well, that was too much of a cause. I had to give it up. That was a blood sucker.
Yeah.
No, we just sort of panned out on that. The last I had, I've just about written it off, and old Marjorie calls me up and gives me hell and tries to get me going again because I'd cranked her up That was funny. I got her all stirred up. And then I went over here and I quit. And then she comes and calls me back up. And says, you can't quit. You've got to do this and got to do that. What a spirit she is. Mercy. All you got to do is get the right thing going and plug her into it.
Yeah.
And she'll burn it up.
Yeah.
But that was just, everybody wasn't ready to fight with that one. They have too many other battles in the county right now. Well, a few rezoning things that they had, they're probably going to get sued against them for.
Norwood Hope?
Yeah. Norwood Hope is, I haven't heard this a fact, but in all likelihood, he will bring suit against the county for rescinding his zoning. Even though they're right, and that's when that Sidney Martin came in and made his great statement.
How was that?
He had a opinion, written opinion on the whole subject. It was about 3 or 4 pages, wasn't it? Great dissertation.
Julie with it?
Yeah, she was at the meeting. A tremendous dissertation. Sidney Martin, I'll tell you then, that's one more character.
Oh, really?
He's righteous. He's a character.
Don't tell me.
Righteous?
Oh, yes, he's a righteous person. He's a straight, he's so political. You know, like you can see him kissing babies. He's got that pork chop look, cigars, and that voice, before microphone voice, you know, like Truman talked about, speaking to 5,000 people. He just floats out of the audience, and he can do it. And he's always into a delivery. He makes a delivery, and he always speaks, he says, well, in the wisdom of the council, and then he says, and then he goes further, and he says, in my wisdom, I just love it. He starts out in the wisdom of the council, or the commission, and then he leaves him behind, and he gets into his wisdom.
He interrupted that meeting, and he got that developer Norwood Hope turning red in the face. He's so mad at him.
Oh, really?
But he just went and told him what he thought anyway about this. And he wasn't going to...
patting him on the shoulder all the time. And Norwood standing about right there.
I thought he was going to explode. He was so angry.
And he said, we've been friends for a long time, Norwood and I. We've been through a lot together. You don't want to know about how good a pals they've been. And then he shot him down. Ooh, Norwood was standing on the corner of a whole bunch of money there. He didn't like it. Boy, I'll tell you. I've forgotten how big that shopping center was, but they were talking about millions of dollars involved in that thing.
Where
Norwood. It's out by the interstate somewhere.
Yeah.
Northwood. That's the name of the section.
And the thing is, the public is up in arms. That's what's nice about Gainesville in Oshawa County. And there's nobody around, no developer around here can do hardly anything without some bunch of ferocious people coming in and growling. You can go to one of those meetings, and if it's crowded, you look through the agenda and see what's happening. You know, some hot issue's up. But he'll have a group of people there ready to raise hell and growl and scream, and it's really nice. And they've gotten some action done. They put down a whole bunch of things. They were going to put in a big apartment complex on... Wilson Cutoff down that area of Ottawa School.
All right.
People got together and kiboshed it. Wouldn't let it go. But Sidney is, he's got all that old image to him, all the whole political demeanor. He's going to kiss a baby, sure as the world. And remember me, I'm Sidney Martin. Buster Mountain, he knows Buster Mountain. He knows people in Newberry. He knows his constituents. And he'll pull off the street and say, hey, Buster, how you doing? You know, he knows people like that. And then he goes and just bombs Norwood Hope. And then another thing he did almost at the same time was Oshawa County wound up with all these little patches of land all over the county that they owned for tax purposes, picked it up on tax rolls. And he says, well, I know what we ought to do with that. We ought to give it to the Vietnam vets. Woo! wasn't received well at all anywhere, except maybe by the Vietnam vets. The rest of the politicians, they didn't figure that was right at all. Such a motion. See, that's where his head works. And he's generally, best I can determine, he's rather serious about that. I mean, he's got an extreme liberal side to him. It's way out ahead of other people. Now, you can't really tell, you know, because that's a fine political move to make, too. At the same time, he pick up an awful lot of Vietnam vet votes just by that one statement.
Well, now, as I gather from looking at the votes, he is the one man on the city or the county government that is put in by a vast majority every time. And he writes a little note afterwards and thanking him for supporting it.
On the paper?
Yeah.
I haven't compared it, but I would just surmise that, because he's well thought of.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, he's the damnedest mixture of person you ever ran into in politics.
Yeah. Well, it looks like that's what it takes, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Right at this day and time, that young fellow on the commission, Warshaw, he's practically useless. He's a nervous wreck, and
his mother's telling him what to do.
You know where he comes from?
Is he local? You think that's the same Warshaw?
His mother.
Are you sure? I don't know it.
She's rather bright.
Yeah.
Her daddy's a lawyer down there.
That must be it then.
He's not bright at all. But
his mother was. She was tickled me to death some of her statements.
Yeah.
She was at the meeting, but John is. You know, he's anxious to be where he should be 70 years from now, tomorrow. He's in a hurry to get there.
You know, when I first knew them, Warshaw was the president of the Farm Bureau, the local one, county one. And Mr. M.M. Bryant was the secretary, permanent secretary. Beautiful notes he took. And I used to go to it when he was out there. They had that one big old huge 150-watt drop light, and out there by the old, wasn't livestock market, yes it was, up in there, in one of those little old buildings, and they had a restaurant next door to it, just a vacant thing, they got a good one now, and I didn't know it then, I found out later. He's a farmer. He's Jewish, and he's a farmer. That's unusual for me. Jews live in cities. and he didn't seem to be too profitable as a lawyer. I've been down there a number of times. He never had any clients. And he's not very satisfactory to talk to. But what I found out was his daddy had made millions of dollars in Tampa as a garbage man. Millions.
That's something.
It's a big place.
A lot of garbage. I just read briefly today that they're doing all the new sociological analysis of people by collecting and analyzing garbage. Stop talking to the people.
Yeah.
All this interviewing nonsense is out the window. They go around the back and pick up what they threw out and figure out who they are. I sort of liked it, even though the psychologists are doing it. These politicians, I don't know. Well, Warshaw is funny, though.
The boy.
Yeah. And he's playing a big role. But he's awful, awful nervous. He'll sit up there and he's physically nervous. I'm kidding, not kidding you. His knee will be patting and he'll be doing this with a pencil and all over. When he's talking to somebody, he's jumping and moving, twitching around. He just can't hold still for anything.
You know, his daddy ran for council for half a dozen times and never could get on it, the commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
So the boy finally got on it.
That's something. Now, where does he live in Gainesville? Where's Warshaw live? Don't remember.
His father lives on that farm, and it's between High Springs and Santa Fe,
mm-hmm.
out in that area. That was fairly open country even when I came down here. I don't know what it is now.
Is that big a cultural thing in Gainesville that you vote on the 7th? Is that going to pass?
I haven't been paying any attention to the public sentiment on it. What were they pushing advertising money on the thing? They allocated that. The county's back of it too.
Mm-hmm. Cost less than not more than seven million.
Maybe. Only I am not too pleased about Harry Merritt being the architect on the thing. Did I give you that big dissertation on academic architecture the other day? Who was that I exploded to? I mean, architecture is a place you can see where academics leave the man out.
Yeah.
And they get everything all slicked up and all this highly spitting professional. And it's just take it away from the person. Absolutely. And Harry Merritt's one of these.
How do they do that?
By formalities, by what really should be according to concepts and theories and what is aesthetic and schools of thought, and see all these guys derivative from like Harvard and Princeton and schools of this nature, and it's where they go and get their do their graduate work, some of them have doctorates or some of them just masters, and it's a very, very formal type of architecture and building design, and they're somehow they can't be thoughtfully arbitrary about anything. And so when they get through with these plans and everything, it's so blastedly formal. It's very rigid to me, very cold. It demands that your table be right here, and it can't be moved over 6 inches.
Some specimens in your picture?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he showed me one picture, and he said if you move that, you throw off the whole room. You couldn't even just change it around if it felt like.
Yeah, you can't sidle your chair around like this in the living room without feeling like you're out of place, out of order. It's true. You need Harry Merritt's work.
Is that right?
And he's going to formalize that. See, to make pump life into an area down there, you need this arbitrariness, the surprise, and something that you can't predict in order to be human. And hell, they plant their trees all in a row. They're going to plant trees. Box edges, everybody's this size and all down in the row. Nothing random.
Well, that's
cold.
Yeah.
It's very, very cold. I'm trying to think of even Bill Morgan's the same way. You know that Florida State Museum?
Yeah.
The pyramid thing? You ever gone into it?
Yeah.
Well, he's got this great, phenomenal space out there that should be a garden, it's a patio. The building surrounds a large space. Hell, people don't use that. It's too cold. It doesn't have nooks and pathways and stuff that you can hide out in and play in. You feel like you're on display. And I spent a long time there, and I didn't see people using it. And then you go over to the music building, and you see people sitting up under a stair or hanging out here and swinging from the balconies, and they're just all in that music building.
Yeah, right.
They're there. Of course, they have, why should they have really more reason? I mean, I'm not sure that they're all music students over there, because it's a place, an inviting place. Even though it's a grand scale, it's the brick is one thing that makes a large difference.
Yeah.
They still haven't learned to use concrete form so they humanize it somewhat. There are a few, Johansson down that did the library in Orlando humanized it quite a bit. But his is a little bit less formal, that more curvilinear stuff in it. But that music building on the campus has these two buildings. And of the two buildings, even though the music building is very, you might call it formal design, it's not very arbitrary. It's still not of the strict order that Morgan's work is. Morgan is very, very strict. And his buildings aren't useful.
Who did the music building?
Dean Rowe in Tampa.
He's just a regular commercial fella.
No, he's not as a high, well, as well thought of as Morgan in the world, but he's a, you know, contemporary with him.
There's an awful lot of wasted space in the music building, though. A lot of grotesque. But I see what you mean. They do hang out.
Yeah, they're there all the time. Mm-hmm. Well, you can argue with anyone, one part of the building.
You can use it, yeah.
It may be wasted space, but it's rather refreshing sometimes to see these.
Well, when thinking about spaces. Yeah.
That's the only building on campus that I can think of that tends towards being a little human, that it invites people to stay around and sit on them. He's got benches there, but people sit on them. I'd sit on them. You would catch me sitting out in that patio at the museum. There's hardly any reason to sit out there at night. In the daytime, it's too hot or something. It's all very formal. It's just nothing intimate about it. Anyhow, it's all over the state. There's several of these academic architects that I know. Morgan's the chief of the group. And Merritt is of the same school attitude. And he's highly academic in his work. And he just...
That's what Eric Hopper said about the academics.
Yeah.
He hated for them to get in power in politics. They would go down the line too much. And
Truman talks about that. Remember that little bit Truman said that they sent him off to, after he got elected lieutenant, they sent him off to that school for 3 months and tried to give him a college education in 3 months, and he hadn't gotten over it yet.
Uh-oh,
what did he say?
Remember when you took him back from Rock River?
Oh, yeah, that was really marvelous. We started in the lake in Lock Lusa, and it's about a 15-minute drive from there to the road, hard road, when you're going slow, 10 minutes. He got in the van, and he started talking about, it was all Florida history, wasn't it? It has to do with how the land was formed and pterodactyls and all, and he started out. He gave this whole dissertation using all these words and everything else, brought it all the way up to the present, archaeological foundations of Florida and what the Indians were doing and everything like that, and got out to the road. He says, "Isn't that something? It took us 2 weeks to learn that in school, and here I said it in 10 minutes. I don't know, some of these kids, I don't know what the school system is going to do to catch up with them, because they're going to be bored to tears hanging around these older places, older attitudes in school. But some of them know a hell of a lot more than the teachers do already. They're sharp. I'm not necessarily referring to George Wade in particular. They've just got a lot of input that the older generations didn't have. They're not sharp in some ways. But they've got a lot of more information in hand, and when the school's just dealing with information, then the school's dead. Yeah. We better get back to production in Micanopy City.
Yeah.
We're back. Cool. Go back and buy some more of the town.
Who was behind the High Life establishment down there?
I don't know. I imagine that's pretty much of a syndicate. I think because it's connected. You got Gainesville and Tampa and Orlando. I think that's a circuit, and the guys pretty much play those three places. Same group, so it must be some sort of similar ownership involved in it.
Mr. Eastman brought this information up. You know, that's his beat, McIntosh and Reddick and down to Johnny Palmas. That the man who owns land is the one who is behind the High Line. They gave him a good price for it, and he agreed to help him get the approval.
And he's that fella down in McIntosh who was behind all the scandals in all the scandals at feeding the farmers and selling vegetables. And Mr. Eastman said he even got the land surveyed there, and he lives next to this old lady who didn't have any money at all. I don't know what she eats on, lives on. She got that house and all the old furniture. Hattie Neal, everybody knows her down there. And he had that survey made and found out that his line went 10 foot over on her place, and he put a big fence there and just let her stand there and wave arms. He's a man behind highlights.
And what was it, Miss Easton said? The new trade winds? It was three crooks. It was a gambler and a
preacher.
And something and a preacher.
Well, what was the
third?
Gambler and a anyway.
What was the three people you told me the last time I was here? I know it was a preacher and a gambler, and the third one was a.
He's the man that owns that little store down there.
What does he call him? Just a crook?
Yeah, a crook.
A crook and a gambler and a preacher. Yeah, we went down there to have a sandwich the other day when these two attorneys came down to buy a house. It was the only place to eat.
Really?
That's where we went trading.
Oh.
And it has changed considerable. It only took us 45 minutes to get a hamburger. Yeah, it's clear.
So this other thing, now how did Roberts come in on that sports arena?
I think he still got a finger in it. Well, he got his hackles up when I talked to him.
What happened when you talked to him?
Well, he sort of blew up to start with. He really got hot under the collar, and then I kept talking to him and he calmed down. I forgot now exactly what I said. I didn't say anything offensive. I was just trying to pick up information about what was going on. And he got right sensitive about it. Because if he'd said no when they were passing he's one of the people that's close by, next door neighbor. And he, like any one of those people, probably could have stopped it, like next door neighbors.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Any one of them, all he'd have to do is say he didn't like it, and he'd go to the people in the town and say, look, I don't like this. And they'd say, well, he doesn't like it, we want to prove it, and there it goes.
So
he's making money.
Even your hardware man.
Oh yeah, he's ready for it. But guy, that you see, those people, they live in the dollar world. Even Smith, as much as he might have lost through actions, that he might not make any more off of that highlight than what the property he sold the property for. I think he did it on a contingency basis, though. I think these other guys put in some money. And then maybe he got held a note for a portion of the new sale. They promoted it, possibly. Anyhow, it's only $95,000 involved the property. So his portion of that probably wasn't a whole lot. When you get three doctors involved in it, get their surgical knives out, you don't leave too much.
Three of them.
It was three people involved, from the best of my knowledge. It just wasn't Van Arnum, just a couple other people. But anyhow, what happens there, as soon as the highlight goes up, that is, if zoning is allowable, in two or three years, his property would be worth $10,000 an acre. That corner he's on.
He won't be. But his family will.
Yeah. Of course, we've finagled around, and I don't know when it's going to pass. Oh, good Lord, is this commission meeting today? Well, it might just be today. And 441 South is going to be what they call greenbelted. That is, no more development on any one section of it other than what's already there.
Oh, really?
They did it on North 441. And in view view of High Line and everything else is strongly suggested that they carry it through to South 441.
That would be
something. Oh yeah, it'd be really nice. You see, if they don't do something like that, then what this creeping corruption is going to start over there in the Micanopy area. But then you're just not going to have even a weekly function without some satellite operations coming in.
Yeah, and then the weekly, it'll be bi-weekly.
Oh yes, and it's going to keep moving along. And next thing you know, you got this, and it's starting at the bottom of the pile. Truth bloodsuckers that go to wrestling. I mean, they just love it. They scream blood. I mean, they say the word. You know, they want blood. That's what they want. Really grand neighbors.
I better let Wade take the bosun along and read it, the book, The Merchant Marine. Except he doesn't have the time to read now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was talking about the blood, you see, that's the cause of the Merchant Marine.
Yeah.
Oh, is that, you talking about what's his name's book at school?
Yeah. Do you have it?
No.
It's really something. Does, Wade have any idea on the trailer? Y'all talked about that.
Yeah. Okay. He just says the number 6 and number 8 Y. Take it off from here, we'll do it no more than we would use out there.
I think there's, if I'm not mistaken, there's a pretty healthy difference between the 6 and the 8 on the cost of it. And the 8 ought to hold it for that. The air conditioner's not that big. So you running, you can get up $50 for wiring. It's just wire cost going over there. Not hooking it up, just buying the bloody wire.
Well, we don't have a very strong box out here.
Well, I think, you know, that's not too expensive what they're talking about doing, guy. Putting in that. I mean, you're buying your new box and putting it outside somewhere.
No, that's the most reasonable approach to it.
And then you can bring 100 amps into here.
Wouldn't that be safer?
Oh yeah. See, that relieves this box of any outside duty.
Yeah.
All this box does is carry the house.
That's right. Now, if those wires weren't underground, you could put the pumps on that outside, you see.
What do you have? Just a drainage field?
With the trailer down there?
Uh-huh.
It was that, had that barrel in the ground, and then we had
the
drain field was this big, long pipe that went off down into the ravine down there, and just move it around.
Yeah.
Loose.
Yeah, that was for the sink.
Mm-hmm. You just keep moving it around, just watered everything down. Because as little as you use it down there, you can do the same thing.
Sure.
Well,
we enjoyed the visit.
Enjoyed mine.
Little piece of cheese anytime you get over here. You always keep it. You come back, Julie.
I hope so.
Yeah, I started eating this, what you call a super drink. Mix you up 3 or 4 portions and bring it over. Got all these.